Welcome to the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast. I'm Brady, and I'm sharing my journey learning Bitcoin, hoping it makes yours a bit easier. Now, how's it going out there, all my Bitcoiners from all around the world? Thanks for joining me again for another day here at the dawn of the Bitcoin Renaissance. Today, we sit down with Justine, aka at Ms. Hodl on Bitcoin Twitter. First, let's check in with Swan. You can get your auto stacking on with Swan. It's super, super simple. One, auto withdraw USD. Two, auto stack BTC. Three, auto withdraw BTC. That's it. One, two, three. You can get it going now. SwanBitcoin.com/Brady, and you'll get $10 worth of Bitcoin dropped into your Swan account. We are also rolling out our referral program, Swan Force. We want you to join the Swan Force. You can sign up at SwanBitcoin.com/enlist/ENLIST. You'll get a custom landing page with your avatar and a message up at the top. You and your referrals will earn sats. Everybody wins. You don't need to be in the United States to join the Swan Force either. You sign up, US-based customers will pay you in sats. Finally, many of you know that I started up a show for Swan called Swan Signal. We wanted to give you a heads up that we have a big one this week. Dr. Adam Back and investor Preston Pish will be joining us for a primetime showing of Swan Signal. You can watch live on Swan Twitter account, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. It'll be next Wednesday, May 27th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. You can also catch it on the podcast feed at swansignalpodcast.com. Pumping out some great stuff with Swan Signal. You should check it out. Maybe add it to your Bitcoin podcast rotation. A quick shout out to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network. Thanks, guys, for including the Citizen Bitcoin Podcast in the feed. Real great to be featured along other Bitcoin-only content like What Bitcoin Did, Anita Posh's Bitcoin & Co., and Guy Swan's Bitcoin Audible, formerly the Crypto Economy Podcast. It's great stuff over there. Check out Let's Talk Bitcoin Network feed, Bitcoin Magazine. Just awesome job on that feed a couple of weeks ago to celebrate the halving. Yeah, just really appreciate being on the feed. Shout out at LTB Network on Bitcoin Twitter. All right, here we go. Today we sit down with Justine, aka Ms. Hodl on Twitter. Justine is a Bitcoiner who drops smart takes on Twitter all the time. I wanted to sit down and chat some Bitcoin with her. We get into her background and rabbit hole story. We talk about how Bitcoin could help rebuild society from the bottom up. Talk about coming to Bitcoin from different political perspectives. We talk about quote-unquote toxicity in the space. Much more. It was a great conversation. Hope you all enjoy. You're back. I was watching a video about you're building a house, and it sounds like you're like back on some land that your family owns that you kind of spent some time at when you were a child.
Yeah. So the land that my family is on right now actually is not where I grew up. They bought it maybe 20 some odd years ago. So I spent some of my childhood there, but not a large amount. I was already kind of moving out of the house. Close at that point. But so the land that I am on currently, I'm trying to do math here in my brain. The land that I'm on currently though is yes, family land. They have a main house there and I bought a portion of their land and I'm working on building a house as I'm in like the guest house. So it's one of those things where it's, you really get to know your family and it's exciting and it's a challenge. And yeah, we are building it with just us. So we've called in, I had the electrician here last week. So we've called in a couple things, but the majority of it has been me and my stepdad just like figuring it out. I drew the plans. He kind of went through and did all the structural stuff to ensure that my plans would be sound. Yeah. And so it's been an adventure for sure.
Have you had any experience like in construction like this before?
No. I did a little bit of set design in college, theatrical set design. So designing stuff was something that I sort of, okay, give me the dimensions and I can work with it. My stepfather, though, he does actually do construction for a living. He does a lot of large commercial buildings, building structures for individuals, but not really residential. So this has been something new to him, too. Of course, he understands the basics of it, but residential is a whole nother game. So it's been a learning experience for both of us. But it's been really educational for sure. And yeah, it's been fun.
I mean, I love the process of building things. I've never built physical like structures or anything like that. I mean, I have little things, you know, just for my home or whatever, but I've been building websites for a long time. And I think the process is probably similar, building on the web versus like building in the, you know, in meat space in the real world. It's all just like running into problems and then solving them, you know, over and over.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Over.
I mean, that's been the majority of the process is, oh shit, like, okay, this isn't working exactly how we saw, or okay, we have to do this instead of this and coming up with solutions. So very much the same. You kind of have that end goal, the thing you're trying to achieve, and then you're working through the steps of how to get there. And sometimes that means redoing things, or, you know, for us, it's been entertaining because it's my home, right? But family has a very big opinion about things. So simple things like windows. I've had to fight for the windows in my house because I wanted huge 6-foot windows. And my lovely stepfather's been like, well, that's too big. You know, what happens when someone drives up and they can see right in your house? You look around, it's like, we don't have neighbors. Who's coming up to the house that I'm concerned that I need these tiny windows from all of this traffic that's going to be able to see in. So it's been fun. It's been really great to be able to design it and decide how to use space that in a general house would probably be wasted. Mm-hmm. You know, like little crevices that have become bookshelves instead of an empty spot, or attic spaces that have become storage or library lofts rather than wasted. So the house is only about 1,100 square foot, but somehow we've squeezed two large bedrooms, two large bathrooms, a huge open kitchen, living room area, and then all sorts of little hidden features. So that's been really fun. And I think that's a huge learning experience as well, is just figuring out what you can do with what you have, which is kind of a hobby of mine anyways.
Yeah. So is this like the reason that you decided to build your own house? And I know like we had kind of got into a little bit when we first started talking, you know, you work with animals. It sounds like you might like raise animals. Do you like raise them for food or farming or anything like for yourself? Like, does it help sustain you and your family?
Yeah. So from where my life story kind of takes off. So I, moved around a lot and actually was in South Dakota with a small homestead and was okay. Really working towards living off the land. Had animals that were providing food, had a large garden, solar power off, you know, well, those sorts of things. So trying to be as self-sustainable and self-reliant as humanly possible. Yeah. Life kind of happened. I had a big move a few years ago. So this is sort of my goal of trying to get back to that and even more self-reliant. So yes, the end goal would be to have animals that provide some sort of food source, yeah. A large garden, those sorts of things. My personal goal in life is to rely on a third party as little as humanly possible. So it's just a constant journey to try to get there. My current animals are not super beneficial. My goats are just for fun. They're just little dogs, essentially. But yeah, we have chickens, we have cattle and those sorts of things. So that is the goal. It's just right now, I wouldn't say that I'm in a super self-reliant place, but working towards getting there for sure.
Okay. So this has sort of been a part of your identity for quite a while, being mm-hmm. sort of self-sovereign, self-reliant. So I assume that that's one of the things that attracted you to Bitcoin.
Yeah. So for me, the whole sovereignty thing to come first. I wanted to be self-reliant and not depend on third-party sources for a very long time. And Bitcoin sort of just fit into that. So when I first came across it, it made complete sense to me that here I was, I wanted less government control. I wanted more control of my own destiny. And here it was money, which is the core of most civilizations, right? Or a tool used by most civilizations, is so used against us. And so to have an asset that couldn't be used against you or couldn't be controlled was huge. So for me, I did it backwards. You know, I just made the tweet about like for Bitcoin, it's really the gateway drug for many people to self-sovereignty. For me, it was completely opposite. I already had those goals and that lifestyle. And then Bitcoin came in and I went, oh shit, this makes complete and utter sense. Yeah, like this is the missing piece. The technology actually kept me away longer than I wished it would have. I first looked into it in 2016, And it was way over my head. So that part actually kept me out of it. I would have been in it sooner. But yeah, the philosophical ideas behind it just fit into my lifestyle completely.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you have this self-sovereign lifestyle. You found this self-sovereign money. You are, you know, we're kind of like, as you're building, you know, toward the, like this new house and building this more self-sovereign lifestyle and this goal, we're kind of as a community or as a collective building this kind of new self-sovereign money. What do you think like Bitcoin would do for you? Like, what do you hope, you know, like a Bitcoin future looks like?
Gosh, I guess for me, it's about empowering the people, you know, to be able to have, like, imagine if you had a society where they couldn't just print more money. Imagine if you had a society where the money wasn't used against you, that it couldn't be corrupted, quote unquote, it couldn't be controlled. And that's freedom, in my opinion. So my ideal life is living off the land and empowering small communities and having these villages or citadels or whatever you want to call them, right?
Yeah.
Of people just working together and having this individual freedom. And Bitcoin plays into that because it's money, which is the root of so many things. And to actually take the corruption out of that, or at least take the centralized control out of that, is key. At the end of the day, that's what you need. And so for a long time for me, precious metals were that, you know, I collected gold, I collected silver, right? You know, having something that couldn't be controlled. Bitcoin is just a whole nother gateway, you know, and it allows so many things that those precious metals can't. And to me, it's the ultimate freedom. And so for me, it's more of a long-term removing the middleman, removing the corruption, and giving power back to the people, which is just, that's my end goal.
Yeah. So you, like, how do you think Bitcoin will affect, like, the current way we govern ourselves then? Obviously, the monetary policy would be much tighter and not be able to be co-opted. That's our hope, right? Like gold was, right? Like, gold kind of lost its sort of monetary properties in 1971. And it's happened over and over again through human history. So, but how do you think things will affect, like, or Bitcoin would affect, like, the government, right? We have this strong federal government now. What do you hope to see in terms of, like, politics and social order in a Bitcoin world?
I think that's a really hard question.
I think,
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, can we really imagine a world where they give up control? Can we imagine a world where they go, okay, all right, fine, you win? I think there's always
Does that concern you? Yeah,
I think that should be a concern. And I think that the only thing you can do is empower yourself in that situation, right? And ensure that you don't need them. You know, if you have to totally go off grid and no longer be a part of society, are you capable to do that? Can you survive? Which sounds very extreme, but I think in this day and age, it's really not that extreme. Are you able to not rely on someone else and still continue your life? That's the goal. But as far as the current system, I think we have a long way to go. I don't think there will be huge shifts. My thought on it is that with every sat you stack, you're taking a little control away from them. Nice. And just weakening them little by little eventually has a big impact. So it may not be a huge flip. It may not be a complete destruction of the current government. It might just be slowly weakening them so that they don't have so much control. They can't push as hard. And that's a win. And those little wins add up over time. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's hard. I don't know what that world looks like. For me, it's just empowering each individual and small communities. And the more that communities are empowered, the more they thrive. And I feel like Bitcoin helps with that.
Yeah. I think, like, in the past, the control of money has really been taken by force, and certainly think, or, like, kind of worry about that from time to time. You know, if not by governments, although I would not certainly put it past governments, especially those like China, Russia, et cetera, but even the United States to really use force to try to stop Bitcoin. I think once especially they see, you know, the writing on the wall, which maybe they haven't yet or just kind of starting to see. But when it, you know, when things really get rolling and you're printing like trillions and trillions of dollars on the regular, and like Bitcoin's like, you know, halving every 4 years, the truth of money will sort of assert itself, and governments will be put into a tough position. And I think having like a cornered massive military is worrisome to me. But I also think on the flip side, that this is sort of a peaceful tool, right? To resist. Like, we don't necessarily need to go to physical war against the government, even if they start to crack down on us physically. And, you know, that would be a really sad state of affairs. But I hope that if we kind of collectively like run our own nodes and sort of in a distributed fashion resist, that we, you know, could pull off a relatively peaceful sort of dissolution of the state. And, you know, kind of like you were saying, like a depowering. What do you think about that? Like, are you concerned about, you know, like state power and military force being used against us as Bitcoiners in the future? And if so, like, you know, how do you think we can resist that?
Well, I think you're spot on with the idea that Bitcoin is the peaceful revolution, right? Okay. I mean, it's not even physical. It doesn't have to be. It's just a slow and steady taking back of control, which is the beauty of it. I think even before Bitcoin, I've always been concerned about government overreach and a physical implementation of that overreach. And so that's something that I think is an ugly truth that you have to sort of accept when you've been quote unquote red-pilled, right? Mm-hmm. How do you do that? I think that we're seeing it right now. You know, we are seeing a lot of overreach happening. And there's people who are pushing back, and then there's people who are saying, well, why are you pushing back? Like, this is such a trivial thing. You know, why does it matter if you can't go get your hair cut? And to me, it's not about that. You know, like, it's, you give an inch and they take a mile, and you constantly have to keep them in check. Do I think that at some point Bitcoin will be seen as an enemy and it will be fought? Yeah, there's a very high likeliness of that. I think one of the beauties of it, though, is there is nobody to go after. You know, who are they going to take down? You take down one node, it still exists. And I think that design of it is really powerful. And I think they understand that. But there's no way for them to control it. So they might take out individuals, but the power of Bitcoin will still continue because it is a decentralized force. I think you have to be smart with it. I think you have to, I understand why a lot of people are very anon. And don't say how much they have. And I think that's smart. And I, as much as I suck at the whole not being visual, I do try to, you know, keep it somewhat private information private and not share those things. And, you know, we've all been in a boating accident or two. I mean, I think those are things that you have to think about. But I don't know. I think that's been an issue for a long time, is keeping the government in check. And I think that's why an armed society is so important. You know, people joke that it's not about hunting. Hunting is a great thing, but an armed society is not about hunting. It's about keeping your government in check, because without that, what stops them? And I think right now we're really seeing that. We're seeing civilization, or at least around me, go, well, hold on, you guys are pushing, and we're going to push back a little bit until we find that balance. And that's just an ongoing thing. How to find that as a Bitcoiner is hard, because for me personally, I just choose to kind of remove myself from the society a little bit, and that might not be the best decision. Maybe that's not the most revolutionary decision, but I think it kind of falls into that whole peaceful revolution. I'm just going to choose to not participate in a lot of this and choose to live my life with my liberties and freedoms and fight for my neighbors to have the same. And if push comes to shove, I'll push. If not, then here I am going to do these things that slowly but surely give me more power and more control over my own life. If that makes sense.
Oh, totally makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's kind of getting back to the idea that you're talking about, like, sort of relocalizing life. And we're seeing that happen too with the situation we're in now. This virus, this pandemic, has really exposed a lot of the fragility of the way we're living, I think, not only of the monetary system, but also of just, like, you know, massive centralization of human bodies, right? Like, you know, cities are a pretty vulnerable place to be right now. And we're seeing, like, the rise of remote work, you know, which had already been happening, but I think that this is really speeding up, you know, things obviously on the monetary front, but also on, like, these trends on the way about the way we're living. And I'm kind of a similar way. Like I'm living in a smaller town, kind of where near where I grew up. You know, when my wife and I started a family, we decided we wanted to be, you know, near our family for our kids for the most part. And it's, you know, been really nice for us to be around as well. And it's a, you know, it's a smaller town. We live sort of on the edge of it and we have some land, and it's a really, I'm really thankful for it at this point in time. Right. Mm-hmm. And we can, like, I can live this way because remote work is possible. So I see, you know, a trend, not just towards like suburbanization, but also like, you know, even more so like out further into the remote parts of this country. And there's just so much beautiful land out there, to sort of, I don't know, move out to. And I get the sense from like a lot of Bitcoiners just through, you know, hanging out conversations kind of behind the scenes with people, that that's sort of like a very, very much a consensus for the, you know, kind of plans for the future is try to accumulate, you know, some self-sovereign wealth and find yourself some land and, you know, just kind of reinvent the way that we've been living for the past 50, 100 years or so.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's one thing that I love Bitcoiners, because we all sort of have these core things in common. And then there's things that you like, we don't agree on at all. Right. But there's this connection, because we all sort of have these core beliefs and the rest of it doesn't really matter when it comes down to it. But yeah, I think that there's a power in just removing your need on government, and they get more powerful when you vote with your dollars, right? That you're giving them that control. So when you actually are taking that away slowly but surely, that weakens them over time. Yeah. And I think that's really powerful. And I think that's one thing that the Bitcoiners in general, no matter how different they are, seem to kind of have that in common. And a lot of people, yeah, want to go out and have a piece of land and live off that land. And I think that's beautiful. And some love the city and have kind of built their own little communities within a city and are doing those things in that way as well, which is great. But yeah, there is this independent nature of Bitcoiners that I think is pretty amazing personally.
Yeah, me too. And I think as like, if this plays out the way the Bitcoiners sort of envision or hope, and there is this, you know, just massive transfer of wealth to people who have decided to hold Bitcoin, then obviously the sort of Bitcoin ethos becomes, I guess, more powerful in society. Have you thought about that? Like, how do you feel about a shift in kind of the balance of power between like this sort of old guard of, you know, money made or wealth accrued through the Cantillon effect and like just this sort of fiat system? You know, there's generations that have really benefited from that and younger generations that have really suffered from it. Like, that seems to be a pretty like cataclysmic change or events. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like it's quote unquote fair, like the way that this sort of money will be, I guess, redistributed in some sense? I hear that quite a bit from my friends who are not Bitcoiners, you know?
Right. I mean, I'm kind of a jackass. I don't think life is fair. So, I mean, fairness is irrelevant, you know? I think that there's an opportunity here, and the individuals who take the risk on that opportunity might benefit. Sure. And those that come in later may not benefit as much, but I think in general, I think it benefits everyone. I think the ideals that come along with Bitcoiners improve everyone's life. I think the idea of having less centralized control is something that benefits everyone. So whether they get in early or they don't get in, or get in way too late, quote unquote. I think there's a benefit in general of this whole idea of changing the way that our society works. And I'm a true believer in you change the money and you change the society, right? You change the power control. You change the structure in general. And to me, it's a positive change. So redistribution of wealth, I think, is important. But I also think that nothing's fair, and there will be people who lose out, and there will be people who feel that they, you know, didn't get a fair shot or whatever it may be. And I know that sounds harsh, but that's life. You know, you do the best you can, and you take the opportunities that are in front of you.
Yeah. And it's not like a socialist redistribution based on like politics and top down like decrees, but it's a bottom up, organic, like you said, like rewarding people who took the risk and kind of saw this opportunity and fought for it. Honestly, like, you know, a lot, most Bitcoiners I think are that become hodlers, right? Come in for the money often, you know, and see this opportunity to take advantage of the monetization process, or just see the number going up and, you know, want to pile in and try to make something out of it. I mean, honestly, like, that's what really caught my attention in 2017. I was, you know, interested in like the Andreas videos when he's like really pumping people up and like he gets so passionate about like the revolution that Bitcoin represents. Mm-hmm. And that definitely caught my attention. But the first like 3 or 4 months, I was just obsessed with like trying to trade, gain more Bitcoin, thinking about like the badass house I'm going to get, like, you know, all that stuff. But I think over time, as Bitcoiners like kind of study and learn and come to understand the importance of what's happening here, that we, you know, start to shift toward this kind of like ideological, you know, motivation for what we're doing here. And so, yeah, I mean, you're taking that risk and you're fighting for something that you really believe in. So, it seems fair. but that's like, besides the, like the energy thing, like that's the number one thing that I get. Cause like I've grown up in like a liberal environment. Like my family were Democrats and big liberals. And, that was just sort of the way I thought about the world because that was the framework I was brought up in. So now that I get all these questions, like from these friends, from this kind of like former world view that I had, you know, I get like, oh, Brady, what the hell's happened to you? Like, you just become this like crazy libertarian, like, you know, like the capitalist, like fascist pigs and all this stuff. I'm like, no, you got it backwards. You got it backwards, right?
Yeah.
Read this and this and this and let's talk after that. So do you have an experience like that? Do you have friends like that you've tried a red pill that are kind of on that side of the spectrum?
Yeah. I mean, my brother's actually very, very leaning on the liberal side, but it's because he has a big heart, right? And I think that is the core of a lot of people like that. They want to take care of their neighbors, and it's not fair that their neighbors are struggling. But in my opinion, that's based on government getting too big. You know, we're no longer a small community that takes care of their own, because if you were, you would see that small communities take care of their own, you know, that your neighbor wouldn't suffer, because in an ideal ecosystem or community, everyone's doing their part, right? And everybody's working towards this society to make it the best that they can. And if somebody falls on hard times, a lot of times the community rises behind them and ensures that they're taken care of. And we've lost that along the way. Mm-hmm. And to me, that solves a lot of the issues that my brother sees. You know, he wants free healthcare for all. He wants all these things. And I'm going, well, who's paying for it? You know, and these are our discussions a lot of the times. But for him, it's more from an emotional side. Yeah. Who is taking care of these people who need help? And my answer to that is their community should be, because they should be contributing to their community. And therefore, when they need help, there's help there for them. The problem is we've now established whole generations who do not contribute to society whatsoever, right? And that we have this welfare system that just it incentivizes not contributing, for lack of a better word. I think there's people out there that need help, and I think that we should have ways to be able to help them, and I will help my fellow neighbor anytime I can. But I think it's just a broken system. And so I think a lot of those ideals are actually because you're a great human being, you know, and you want to take care of your neighbors, but the actual way to do so, it doesn't make any sense. The system itself doesn't make sense. From my standpoint, I grew up in a very conservative, Republican kind of environment, and, you know, Trump lovers. And I hate to say that, but it's like, now I'm sitting here going, but they're both wrong. And they're going, oh, you know, like, vote for this team. My team's the winner. And that just makes me crazy. So that's more of my background is my team is better than your team. And totally. I just completely refuse to have any part in that because it's just broken in general. So a lot of times for me, trying to red pill people is they get these core aspects of like the corruption and, you know, these centralized powers, but they can't seem to accept the fact that their team is also part of the problem. Right. And if they can get past that, the rest of it's pretty easy. But it's that pick your team, man, red or blue. And I just, yeah, that's the hardest part for me personally in my life to kind of red pill people is, I joke that in 5 seconds I could have a very armed militia and we could take care of shit, right? But trying to get them to see like the outside world of outside of their team is a little bit harder. But actually with current events, that's sort of opening their eyes, you know, tyrannical government control and this printing is ruining the economy and all these conversations that have come up lately. And I'm going, well, no shit. Like this is what I've been saying. so yeah, so different background on that, but sort of understand, yeah, it's hard when we're so ingrained with these beliefs that have been given to us and fed, yes, you know, through the talk, yep, box for so long to kind of see outside of that. Yep. It's hard. It's hard to break through that.
And that's the thing is like, it's not a different background. It's the same. It's just that we, you know, mm-hmm, our families were on different teams, right? But yep, it's the same thing. It's just the polarization. And that is really taken advantage of by the powers that be to maintain control. And it's just, yeah, I mean, it's the same side. It's two sides of the same coin and it just passes, mm-hmm, back and forth, but the policies don't really change that much. You know, like in 1971, you know, Nixon took us up the gold standard. Milton Friedman, you know, like said 5 years, 6 years before that we're all Keynesians now. And it's not like even at that point the you know, one of the main things that kind of separated the teams was monetary policy. And that was gone. That was out the window. And so you're left with these kind of like these social issues where you take, you know, maybe a handful of them and you take the opposite sides and you just pit people against each other. And you just have these, mm-hmm, this, you know, these politics of fear, these social politics, and it drives everyone apart and we can't focus on the problems, like the root problems, right? It distracts everyone. And yeah, I mean, I hope that, you know, another outcome of this pandemic and the response to it, which, you know, like the monetary response, I think we may have been able, like, I think another sort of, you know, part, like a downturn in the cycle, another crash on the crisis was coming inevitably, the everything bubble was going to be burst at some point, but maybe they'd be able to paper over it one or two more times. And we're talking about like 2030s, 2040s, even where the final showdown actually happens between like sound money and easy money. But I think that that's a lot closer now. And so I hope that that helps us sort of red pill enough Bitcoiners. So I started working at this company called Swan Bitcoin. We mm-hmm. just launched like 6 weeks ago. And our founder, Corey Clipston, wrote this great piece. It's on our blog called 10 Million Bitcoiners, the Intransigent Minority. And I love the idea because it's like you just need a small, dedicated minority to really change the larger like country and world. And the example that's, you know, commonly given, like, I think this is a Nassim Taleb idea and he probably borrowed it and, you know, reformed it, reshaped it from someone else in the past. But, for instance, like kosher food, right? Like most of the American like food industry makes kosher food, even though there's a very small minority of people who really demand it just because it's easier. Might as well, right? No one else really cares. And the small minority really, really cares. So let's just like, you know, cater to them. So he sort of did this back of the napkin, like math, and he thinks that we need like kind of on the order of about 10 million hardcore Bitcoiners in the United States to really change things. And I, you know, I think we can get there relatively quickly, especially in the environment that we're in now. So that's just like a super interesting, take. I think the future's sort of been pulled forward a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in any movement, it really does just take a small core group of individuals who push it forward. And I mm-hmm. hate to say that about our society, but we have a lot of followers. And if mm-hmm. sometimes it's just easier to let that core group push whatever forward. And sometimes that's really negative, and sometimes it works out in a positive way as Bitcoin would. But I think right now we're seeing a lot of groups that have very little in common coming together with this pandemic. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day about some of the things that have been happening, standing up against local government and some of the things they're trying to pass with all of it. And it was really interesting to see like NRA folks next to anti-vaxxers and next to, you know, such and such people who have generally nothing in common and are generally fighting each other, now standing next to each other fighting the government. And that's super powerful. And there's been such a long time of divide and conquer, right? And so now you've got people who are actually coming together, and that's huge. And that's scary from a government standpoint. Like, that is shit you don't want to see. You better work on dividing and conquering, because that's when shit gets real. So I agree. I think that a small force can do a lot. And I think right now we're seeing a lot of people questioning things that maybe they wouldn't have questioned without this. They wouldn't have, it wouldn't have even been something that they even remotely paid attention to. And so to see this endless printing, and for every freaking dollar that's printed, people's livelihood is being, you know, put into a bad place. Their savings is dwindling away, you know, that all of these things they see firsthand. And then you have Bitcoin, which has 21 million cap. No more will ever be created. Nobody can print it. Nobody can take it. I mean, that's huge. And I think it's becoming more attractive to people that maybe would have never looked at it before due to these circumstances. And I'm hoping that that will lead into a positive direction. I think the idea, of a core group can push it. And now's the time. I mean, my God, like what a better time for Bitcoin. And I know that sounds strange in this terrible world that we're in right now, but Bitcoin is shining. And I think that's because of the way that it was designed. You know, it was birthed in a perfect moment, and we're seeing history repeat itself with just endless printing and endless bailouts and our neighbors being out of jobs while huge corporations flourish. Like, it's time to take the power back. And I feel like Bitcoin is a amazing tool to be able to do that personally.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think another thing that I noted down here while we're talking and circle back to is this idea of personal responsibility, right? Like the top-down sort of statist approach, welfare state ideas, which again, like in the worldview that was kind of given to me was like, this is something that we need. We need to help these people out who are hurting. And like you said, it just like makes sense. Like, I care about these people. I want to make sure that they're, not like suffering in poverty or whatever, and help them give them a leg up and get them back on their feet, et cetera, et cetera. But it really damages the idea of personal responsibility, the incentive to become, personally responsible. What's your take on that? Like, what's your thoughts on it through your life experience? And like, do you think Bitcoin's gonna, sort of change things on that front for humans?
Well, I think that we're in a really amazing time right now that anybody can own Bitcoin. And I think that's something that people don't quite understand. Even when I got into it, I didn't understand that you could buy a fraction of a Bitcoin, right? I didn't get it. I looked at it and went, wow, this is way out of my price. This is for people who are in a much different financial standpoint than me. But currently, how many projects do we have that you can earn Bitcoin? Like, that's huge. You can earn Bitcoin with your daily transactions with FoldApp or Lolly. You can earn Bitcoin by doing simple tasks. There are projects that let you earn crypto by making content. Like, there's so many different ways to earn Bitcoin right now that I think that it's giving a chance to people that maybe didn't have that chance before. Yeah. And that's something that I think is huge in our society, because there are situations where it is not an even playing field, we'll say, that people in certain circumstances have a hard time getting a leg up. And I think that we are seeing so many different projects that are giving that opportunity to people that didn't have it before. And so from that sort of standpoint, I think it's huge in that regard. We're also seeing huge improvements in places that see individuals debanked, right? That have no access to a financial facility whatsoever. And Bitcoin sort of stepped in and taken care of them in that regard. So I think that at its core, Bitcoin is meant for everyone. And it really does help those who are less fortunate. And also, I think that it helps empower communities, which help those that are less fortunate. So in that regard, I think it does play a role. As far as how much, I don't know. I think the welfare system is sort of broken at its core. And until we incentivize positive contributions to an ecosystem, we're always going to have that broken system. But I think the money factor improves every aspect of it. You know, we joke a lot about how Bitcoin improves you as a human being. You know, like, you see these things and you start wanting to be better and be more reliant and more you take on different tasks that maybe you didn't before. And so I think there's something to that. There is a confidence that comes with self-sovereignty that improves you as a person. And mm-hmm. I think each step, people start improving themselves more and more. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think it plays a big role in that. As far as what exactly that will be, I don't know. I think it's ever evolving.
Yeah, yeah. And another idea there is, like, if you are trusting or relying on, you know, a federal government, for instance, you know, that's presiding over 350 million people to take care of the people who you see suffering in your community, then that responsibility, you're absolved of that responsibility in your mind, right? And it seems to me, like, as I've been thinking about this more and more, that the way our society is organized now is sort of an aberration, similar to like the kind of fiat age that we're living in, is an aberration of history. Humans seem to like work best when they're in kind of small groups, right? Smaller groups, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, several hundred people or something like that, where everyone knows each other and has like skin in the game for each other. And that, you know, feels some personal responsibility to take care of each other. See one of your, you know, fellow community members suffering, like you're going to step in and take care of them. And, you know, a group of people will kind of unite around that, that cause. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it totally makes sense. And it's really flipped, like I said, that worldview that I had growing up. So yeah, I'm thankful for that. So let's talk a bit about how you learned about Bitcoin. Like you said, like you already were kind of predisposed to learning about it or like understanding it from like a self-sovereignty perspective, and even from like a monetary perspective, because you were into gold. So how did you, once you like really decided like, okay, this is interesting and I'm going to learn about it, what was your approach? Who did you learn from, and kind of what resources did you use and do you recommend to friends?
So my journey to Bitcoin is probably longer than it should be for anyone and is unique in my opinion, even though I don't think it's very unique because I think a lot of people have the same journey. But it's actually why I'm passionate about helping quote unquote noobs, right? Or normies. Yeah. And because, so for me, I looked at Bitcoin in 2016, it came up, I don't even know, some sort of alternative news source, I'm sure. And I looked at it and went, wow, this makes complete sense. But my questions were, what makes it secure? What gives it value? How does it even work? How can some sort of digital numbers have any value whatsoever? How is that money? And had a lot of questions. And so I went and looked at it and looked at exchanges and looked at keys and wallets and went, oh my God, I don't get it. You know, it's just, it was difficult for me. I am not very tech savvy, which is actually something that really frustrates me because there's things I've taught myself in my life that normal people have no idea about and seem very difficult for people. And for me, tech is just, I don't get it. It's something that goes over my head and it pisses me off. It's one of those things that I really need to conquer for my stubbornness. But so I looked at it and it totally intimidated me. And I went, okay, that's just not for me. I'll look at it another day. And some months passed, and then actually I found Bitcoin because of altcoins. And this is mm-hmm. why I have a weird relationship with altcoins. So then I was watching maybe James Corbett, and he was talking about sort of the idea about content, how you don't own your own content. You're giving power to these centralized sites, right, by giving them your content. And that made sense to me. And at the time, I was blogging some recipes and things for a small business that I had developed. And he was talking about Steam, which was a mm-hmm. some sort of blockchain cryptocurrency where you posted content and you earned from it. And I went, oh, okay, well, that's weird, but okay, crypto, you know, I heard of Bitcoin a few years ago, so that sounds interesting. And so eventually I just looked at it and went, all right, well, what's the worst that could happen? So I threw some blogs on there, earned a little bit, and actually just got really interested in the tech behind it and went, oh, okay, so this is what a transfer looks like. This is what these keys were that I was reading about. This is what blockchain is. And kind of dug into the tech behind it and then became involved in the behind the scenes and really worked to try to make this thing what I thought Bitcoin was. And I don't know how else to say that, but it was like, oh, okay, so this is what we need to do to improve this, to be that money that I saw that was so revolutionary. And I tried really hard to make it that. And then I had this moment where I went, oh, like, this isn't the same thing. Like, this isn't what I was looking for. But due to my training ground there, I went back and looked at Bitcoin, and all of the terminology then made sense to me. It wasn't as scary. It wasn't completely out of my reach anymore. And I invested in Bitcoin due to the experience that I had. And Steam has now become Hive and all of those things. And my take on alts is a little bit different. And I've had conversations with a lot of people about this. Like, to me, Bitcoin is money, right? Bitcoin is money. It's the only one. Alts are like special points you get from your credit card. Or if you want to give points to people because they're playing games and making content and doing more social things, cool. I don't care. As long as you don't try to market it as money. As long as you're not fooling people. So for me, the issue is the fooling. Manipulative marketing, the scamming. Can't handle that at all. But if people want to play with this technology, even though they don't really need a blockchain to do these things, whatever, you know, free market, who cares? Right. Do whatever the hell you want to do. Totally. So for me, I had a moment of realizing, okay, Bitcoin's money, and these are kind of social games that people can play. And if they want to do that, cool. So my journey to Bitcoin was through alts. That was my training ground. I don't think I would own it if not for that, because I'm not sure I would ever have felt confident enough in many aspects of it to jump in. So that's kind of how I found it. And I didn't even invest in Bitcoin until, I think it was late 2018. Yeah, so it took me a long time to kind of get back around. And so that's why I'm really always trying to tell people, like, don't be too harsh on people. Like, they need to experiment. They need to understand it. And I think that's why I have a passion for somehow trying to find a way to help people who were in the same position as me not have to go through all of the hoops, right? Not have to go through all of the training elsewhere. Why can't we have that for Bitcoin? I don't know. So my journey was a little bit different. And yeah, it's established me to be... I have a love-hate relationship, we'll say, with altcoins, because it got me here. I see a purpose for them. I believe in free market, but also there's just so many damn scams and
so true
and shit bags that just pisses me off too. So yeah.
I hear that. And you know, it's inevitable, right? Like you said, it's a free market. It's the open source projects. Mm-hmm. I mean, the code's out there, you know, imitators are going to be made. There's some innovation out there, I guess, in kind of changing the way, you know, like original Bitcoin blockchain and et cetera, system works or whatever. And, you know, I'm all for that. Experiment, you know, advanced cryptography, like projects like Monero and Zcash and stuff are like working on, you know, new cryptographical methods, but don't pass it off as money. Yeah. Like, just don't, just stop.
Exactly. That's my problem.
Yeah, me too. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, they're going to exist. And like you said, you know, like it's sometimes, like it does actually often serve a good purpose because one, like, you know, you got in because you decided to throw some blocks up on Steam. And so that got you into this idea of crypto. And then you're like, kind of, you know, obviously you're going to discover Bitcoin if you just discover one altcoin, right?
Right.
But then also people get wrecked. Like I got wrecked, you know, that story happens over and over again. Like you find this entire world of shit coins and you're like, okay, you know, I'm going to gamble. I'm at the casino. It's going to be fun. I'm going to throw the dice. Try to make more Bitcoin is always like, you know, even if you have that goal, you're like, obviously Bitcoin is the one that matters. I'm going to try to make more Bitcoin. Yeah, no, it doesn't work. You might get lucky a couple times.
And that is really the big issue. And I was actually just talking to Shinobi about this the other day, was that his concern is the people that get wrecked. And I get that. Absolutely. Yep. But at what point is it not your responsibility to teach people a lesson that they have to learn themselves?
Yeah.
But what you do is you need proper education. Those people shouldn't have any sort of confusion about what the difference of Bitcoin versus BitConnect are, right? Like that should be clear as day. They should be able to find the resources they need to fully understand that so that they don't go, oh, BitConnect looks amazing. It's clearly just a more cost-effective Bitcoin. I'm going to go balls deep in it. Like, no, that's not a good idea. But we need to, as a community, or even, you know, as individuals, I know we are not a community, somehow provide those resources so that people can learn, but also give them the freedom to do what they want. Because, yeah, I mean, I struggle with that a lot with the free market idea. It's not my job to force someone into this one entity, right? That's what I'm trying to get away from. Free market is free market. Decide what you want, but you should have the information and the education you need to make a informed decision. And if there's anyone scamming in the space, they should be called out, just like they would be in a small community. If you're running a business in a small community and you're scamming people, the community is going to make it clear that you're scamming. Exactly. And therefore you lose business, and therefore the free market works as it does. I think alts have a purpose. I think it's cool to play with the technology. I think some of these ideas are short-sighted. They're thinking, oh, we need A, B, and C to achieve this. But at the end of the day, is that really needed? Are you really solving a problem, or are you making up a problem to solve?
Exactly.
And at the core, like, Bitcoin is solid when it comes to money. And I don't think that you don't need to mess with it. it's solid in its design, and that's the money. The rest of it is experiments. I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
I have no issue with that whatsoever. But if you're being a scammer, yeah, then I have an issue.
All right. Two things here. I don't want to forget. Actually, I'm just going to start with this one. So you're cool with like the strategically applied toxicity, which is like an acronym that one of my friends came up with. It's SAT, right? Strategically applied toxicity, applied toward shitcoin scammers who are trying to, you know, confuse people with the intention of taking their Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually wrote that piece about toxic nature, I guess. I mean, I think that there's a protective nature in Bitcoiners that they've seen it, right? They've seen people get wrecked. They've seen people's life savings go to hell, and they attack the whatever's coming in to attack the body, right? My brain is not working today. Words are not coming out the way that they should. But yeah, so I think toxic is acceptable in the right form. I think toxic is an interesting word because it does have a very negative history to it, right? And there are some extreme toxic people out there, and that's not something that we should encourage. But I think when it's used in the space, it's the idea of OGs or individuals in the Bitcoin community standing up and saying, no, this is a scam. Fuck off. You're not going to scam people out of their life savings. And I think that's acceptable. I think that the way you do it matters. I think that you can't force people to see things the way that you see them. And so I don't really like some of the more hostile bullying about individuals who use names in their handle or that sort of thing. But I understand the history of it. So I sort of get both sides. I get that they've seen scams. I get that they're trying to protect the space. But also, I believe in free choice and free market. So it's...
Right.
I'm torn there. But yeah, I think absolutely a huge part of the free market is actually to call out the scams though. So you need that. You need people to stand up and say, no, this is bullshit and this is why. And then people can see that and they can make decisions based on that. You can see projects go out of business because they lost business due to this, and they should. So I have no problem with being toxic. I think that it's needed in a society. I think that the doers of a society always stand up and say what's right. And try to protect others who are maybe don't know. And I think that's sort of the role that toxic Bitcoiners sort of play. And I might bust their balls occasionally when they get a little too toxic. But at the end of the day, I think they're protecting the space. That's what they're doing. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, my experience has been that people who like cross the line into ad hominem and like pretty terrible shit, which I've seen, you know, a few instances of, not a lot, they just kind of get ignored, you know, like from then on, and their, you know, engagement rates or whatever on Twitter just kind of plummet, and they're like, yeah, all right, yeah, that guy. So yeah, I mean, I think the Bitcoiners like are just generally good people who have formed a very powerful immune system for the space. All right. So you also brought up the point of education, and I think, you know, absolutely agree with you on this, which is, you know, when I kind of finally figured out what was going on, it took about 7 or 8 months, but I got there, and just like the switch flipped and I was, you know, all in, absolute conviction. And I was like, all right, we've got to educate. So, you know, I started the podcast, and now I'm at Swan helping, with education and, built, you know, writing materials and doing even more podcasts and audio and video and all that stuff. I think we're in a much better place, like on this run, than we were in 2017. What's your take on that? Like, do you think we're going to see less, like the scammers have less success in this next run?
Well, I hope. I mean, I think scammers always somehow come out when the price goes up, right? And they always somehow find a way. But I think that there are a lot more educational materials now than there were before. I think a lot more people are focusing on that. I think, I mean, I've seen a few people enter the space and immediately kind of get funneled to the right information, which is huge. Yeah. And I think the resources are there. The one thing that I see, and I see a lot of people working on it too, is that there's still a disconnect from people who come from the background or are very familiar with it. Even the way that they describe something, they don't understand how over individuals' heads they are. I saw a conversation about somebody saying you should run a full node, right? And you should. That's very important. That should be explained of why that's important. But somebody said, well, how do I do that? And the response was like so technical, right? Like you just download this and then you do that. And they were like, okay. And I thought, they have no idea what you just said. Yeah. Like they have absolutely no idea the words that just came out of your mouth, and they're embarrassed to ask. So they're going to go, okay. And they're going to go somewhere else. So I do still see a disconnect for that. Just kind of dumbing it down is not the right response, but it is a little bit. Like, you need to explain it to someone who has absolutely no idea the background that you have. And sometimes that's hard to do, because when you're so familiar with a subject or something comes so second nature to you, it's hard to grasp that someone else isn't understanding what you're saying. So that's the one thing that I would like to see more focus on. And like I said, I think people are focusing on that, but that's the one weakness I see, is that there's still a little bit of a disconnect of, okay, we're talking about people who have no background, have no idea about taking care of their own finances, really. You know, like, as a society, we're pretty damn spoiled. We drop our stuff off at the bank and we use our card, and that's all we do. So to actually teach them these aspects that they're not familiar with is going to take time, and it's going to take step-by-step directions and visual help and understanding that they don't get it. You know, teach me like I'm five. I have a little bit of a background in elementary education. And so for me, I spent a lot of time actually on Steam, and before that, of breaking things down in tutorials. And it was like step-by-step, like how do I teach a child how to do this? How do I explain it in ways that maybe seem way too dumbed down, but it clicks, and then they can go get additional information. You know, once you have this core understanding, then you can add on top of that and you can build on top of it. So that's one thing I want to see more of. But I think we're in a way better place than we were before. And I think that even with the information now, I think if I would have been directed to the right spot, I probably would have ended up here rather than elsewhere. So yeah, I think we're in a better spot. I think we're still gonna have scammers though. That's just
no doubt about that.
That's the world.
I just hope we make them less successful. That's my hope. And on the node front, like, it's obviously extremely important. We've seen like the reachable public node count drop by a couple thousand in the last like several months, which is, you know, like, not cool. It's not good. I think it's a product of like kind of being at the end of the bear market, the beginning of the bull market. They really, like, full nodes really shot up in 2017. They'll go back up again. But I think one thing that we need to do is, I have a Noddle and a Casa sitting here next to me, and they, like, the Casa in particular has a great UI software setup. And there's some good like open source stuff like MyNode out there for software to kind of run nodes. And it's definitely getting better. I think it would be awesome to see like even more user-friendly, just like plug and play nodes. Just plug it into your router, go to this, you know, URL in your browser, and, you know, boom, you're done. And like scan a QR code and you connect your mobile wallet to your node, and, you know, through Tor, and it's done. Like, you know, done in like 5 minutes. And if we can make it like that kind of user experience, then, you know, we'll have a lot more success on that front. Now, we're going to get there. Like, we're already pretty close.
It just takes time. I mean, my ideal situation was, we need a node on every cell phone, make it an app, you know, somehow. If we can get there, you know, it's as easy as running your mobile wallet, then we're golden. And some people are going to need that. Sorry, but there are some people in this world that are not going to run a node unless it's that easy.
Exactly.
But hopefully on the way there, we have enough individuals who can figure it out. And like you said, the new UI is going to be huge. And I think there's focus on that. And things are getting easier and easier. More plug and play is going to equal more nodes. And I think there's more of a focus on that. But yeah, I think that that's hard for some people to understand too, because a node to them is so easy. Like, what do you mean it's difficult? You just do this, this, and this. And the rest of society is going, okay, yeah, like I'm not going to do that. That's clearly over my head. And we have to somehow bridge that gap, because I think there's a ton of people in the industry that still aren't there. I mean, I am working on setting up a Lightning node. Justin Folsom's been hopping with that, but I don't even have a full node yet. I want one. I want a damn satellite node. Like, this is my goal, but I'm not there yet. And it's because I'm really trying to learn as I go and understand things and kind of grasp it and document my experience along the way. Nice. So I think that's the goal, but it's going to take people longer to get there than others. And I like to remind people of that, like, being a Bitcoiner is a journey, right? And it's a stepping stone, and you go from one step to another. And sometimes it takes people longer to get there than others, and that's okay. But they need to understand why it's important. And that's why the verbiage of, like, you need to run a node or you're not a Bitcoiner. Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. It's true. I mean, you're not being your own bank unless you're verifying those transactions, but we need to tell people why they want to do that and welcome them to slowly get into Bitcoin. Yeah, maybe they're just using it a little. That's okay. And as long as they understand that the end goal should be running your own node, verifying your transactions, you know, this is your goal. This is how you become self-sovereign, and this is how you become your own bank. And this is how you get there. And I think as we start to develop that more, we'll see more and more people taking that on. But it's, yeah, I think we are way further than we were before, but we still have a long ways to go. Totally. But we're getting there. We're getting there for sure.
We are. All right, Justine, I'm going to wrap this up. I won't let you get back to work, and I've got to jump in the support queue. I've got a couple of chats coming in. This was a ton of fun. It was really good to kind of get to know you and hear your story and chat Bitcoin. So I saw your handle was Ms. Hodl, which I love. Like, I'm surprised that was available in early 2019, which is awesome. Have you ever gotten any, people asking questions about you and Mr. Hodl?
All the time. In fact, I felt really bad because I changed it from Mean Justine just randomly, because that was actually a joke that stayed around too long. And I hodl things. Like, that's sort of been my joke since being here, is I hodl everything. Like, I'm going to hodl Bitcoin. I'm going to hodl, you know, land. I'm going to hodl everything. And that's your way to self-reliance. So I changed it, and we had had a conversation randomly on Twitter before, because it was an alt account that I was saving in case I got banned, because I went through a little Twitter ban issues. And I made some comment about it, and I think he said, like, no, it's cool. I'm cool with it. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And so when I changed it over, yes, immediately, oh, Mr. Hodl, when did you get married? And I was like, oh, shit.
There it is.
He's going to be mad at me. But he's been very nice about it. And then somebody made the last joke I heard about it. Somebody said something about getting married, and I made some joke about, well, why would I marry my brother? And then that ended it. And it's like, okay, cool, because I'm sure his wife doesn't like this. So let's, it's not Mrs. Hodl, right, guys? Like, it's Miss.
It's Miss. Come on.
Yeah. So, but there have been jokes about that, yes. Yeah.
All right. You can follow Justine at Ms. Hodl, MSHODL. Definitely give her a follow. Lots of just, like, awesome Bitcoin tweets, but also, like, just some fun, like, living off the land, self-sovereignty stuff on her feed. So definitely give her a follow. Really appreciate you taking the time to join me today. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks to Justine for joining me. It was a lot of fun to chat some Bitcoin. I am at Citizen Bitcoin on Bitcoin Twitter. Justine is at Ms. Hodl, at MSHODL. Let us know what you thought about the episode. Love to hear from you. The podcast website is citizenbitcoin.world. Share it with your family and friends. I know there's a lot more inbound interest these days. When people ask what a good podcast might be to listen to, I would love for you to recommend Citizen Bitcoin at citizenbitcoin.world. Thanks again to Swan Bitcoin for sponsoring the episode, and to LTBN for including the podcast in the feed. Check out my merch store at layer1btc.com. Click on partners and then Citizen Bitcoin. Cool stuff there to check out. Supports a great Bitcoiner, Nick Ward, a great Bitcoin-only business. Check out the podcast, as I mentioned above, that I created for Swan, the Swan Signal podcast. Swan Signal Live happens every Wednesday, live on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Twitch. Next week is a big one with Adam Back and Preston Pish, so watch out for that. If you have any questions for me, please feel free to reach out. I'd love to hear from y'all. My DMs are open on Twitter. I am also at Citizen Bitcoin on Telegram. You can contact me either way. Been having some great chats lately. It's been fun to talk to you guys. So reach out, ask me your questions. Just hit me up with something interesting. All right, that's it for this week. Take care out there, Bitcoiners, wherever you happen to be in the world.